086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25,000. And don't forget, if you want to voice note WhatsApp, you certainly can. This is a voice note in relation to the 100% redress party. Let's hear what this listener has to say.
Morning, Greg. I'd just like to mention that the 100% redress party is not a single issue party. They have different policies from health to tourism to giving hope to our young people, the openness and transparency in government. But obviously the biggest issue affecting property owners at the moment is the defective concrete crisis that we're experiencing. And that obviously is one of our main policies that needs addressing. And that's something we'll be working towards. But we are not a single issue party. There are several policies which can be seen on our website. So yeah, I'd just like to correct that.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not, it is, it's fine if you want to see it as a correction. The point being is, and the point I was trying to make is that as it comes to an election time, it is, say, for instance, if you are concerned about the defective concrete blocks crisis, you might be drawn to that political party. If you're concerned about the future of farming, you might be drawn to the Independent Farmers Alliance or whatever it's called. That it is a simpler, easier message to sort of relate to. Not single issue, of course, but I take your point. But the point I was saying is it's clearer for people on certain issues which way to vote. Hi, Greg. I would be disgusted if this government got back into power again. They've done nothing for the people of Donegal, and the amount of young people leaving this country every month is unbelievable, saying they can't live in Ireland anymore with the cost of living. If I could leave myself, I would never be back in Ireland again. This government has it destroyed big time. Okay. I take your point. That's your view. The people are sick listening about a united Ireland. The talks are only getting underway in Northern Ireland again. This is why Sinn Féin are losing votes. A lot of people are very angry that Sinn Féin are bringing up united Ireland when government has only reassembled in the north. It's not the right time to bring that issue up, says a listener. I will not vote my old way, Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael this time. Look at our country, not safe to walk in where I used to walk because so many foreigners are in place now. I mean, are you sure it's not safe? Because there are people of different nationalities around, or have you, arguably, and this is only just putting it out there, have you been told that it's not safe? If I look through the papers, I could go through the papers now and there's, 50 crimes in a paper. It's interesting to see the majority of those crimes, obviously, aren't caused by foreigners, but that's your view. And I'm not trying to convince you otherwise or not, but I'm just curious if it's a perceived fear or a fear based on fact. Hi, Greg. Pierce is on about rent going up. What about mortgages going up? My mortgage went up from €426, wait for this, to €1,606. I had to put the rent up to cover the mortgage. I didn't hear Pierce standing up for us, the mortgage holder. Okay, so that was this is a second property or an investment property, and you were paying mortgage of €426. It went up to €1,606. That being said, and this is just a point for conversation, is it really, that's your investment or that's what you have there, is it really up to the renter to cover all of your expenses? It is your investment. You end up with the property at the end of the day. Is there a perception amongst people with those properties that the renter should pay everything, all of the mortgage? Now, of course, you didn't put up to 1606, but as I say, that's your investment. It's been affected by markets. Should the renter then sort of cover your decisions, maybe not to fix or whatever it might be? I don't know. As I say, I'm not criticising you or having a go. I'm just putting that out there. I'll be voting Sinn Féin this time. Okay. Another concerned about the amount of people coming into this country. What is Sinn Féin's policy in relation to that? Hi, Greg. We always voted Fianna Fáil in this house, but not anymore. We're changing to Sinn Féin as Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are in for years and I don't see them doing anything. Ask Pierce, if Sinn Féin get into power, will they still be helping corrupt government agencies cover up corruption during Public Accounts Committee meetings? Greg, Sinn Féin aren't for the Irish people. They are all for flooding the country with refugees. That's why they're down in the polls. Another, will Sinn Féin sign the new EU Migrant Pact, Ireland? Then they go on to say, and this won't be a regular texter, that Denmark has an opt-out clause on immigration measures under the Lisbon Treaty. Will Sinn Féin support a referendum on this pact? Why should we pay for rubbish RTE? Lies, lies, lies. And don't mention hardly one mention of Inishowen or Donegal. And even when Katie Taylor's boxing was on, they didn't show it. It should be free now. I take your point, what you're saying. Katie Taylor is signed to Matchroom. Matchroom are signed to DAZN. And Katie Taylor is the jewel in their crown in terms of women's boxing. There is no way that RTE, firstly, they couldn't have built her, but she's contracted to DAZN, she's contracted to Matchroom. So there is no scenario where that could be shown on RTE unless they paid many millions and were able to reach an agreement with DAZN and what have you. But I take your point, but there's just no way RTE, Virgin Media, any of those could take that fighter who's tied to a promoter, tied to a network, and show the fight. Hi, Greg. The discussion around RTE is how to fund it and what sort of model we want. But should the discussion not be, do we really need RTE? Yes, seriously, do we need public broadcastings? Having to pay RTE a tax because all you did was buy a piece of electronic equipment is utterly wrong. And last one, just before the break, with the current outbreak of measles and a recent death, is it time that no child should be given school entry without full vaccination? Well, I mean, I think it's always the case that parents should have the... is it not the case that parents should always have the right, for whatever reason, to not go down that route? Compulsion would be, I don't know, not a good idea, I don't think. Okie doke. Now, there's a new book out, Money Made Easy, Simple Steps to Manage Your Finances. It's from the author, Paul Merriman, who joins us on the show now. Good morning to you, Paul. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Money Made Easy. Is that not like an oxymoron?
It kind of is, in fairness. Actually, one part of the book, I do go through the fact that sometimes it's actually easier to go out and try and make additional income rather than trying to save it. So whether that's overtime or a side hustle or something else. So it's sometimes easier to bring the income in rather than save for it over a few years if you have that within you. Now, again, people might be able to do that with kids and other commitments or maybe illness or something else. But it kind of is, you said, Max Moran, and it kind of works throughout the book, to be fair.
I wonder how many of us on the most basic level have a sense of our income versus our outgoings. You know, just something as simple as that. How much comes in, which is probably easier to calculate, versus, you know, how much goes out, how much is we have to meet, how much is discretionary. I think a lot of us don't really know that.
No, we don't. You're dead right. And actually, in fairness, again, in the book, in the first couple of chapters, we go through what's called personal budgeting. Now, when some people hear the word budget, and especially when we're talking to a financial planner, they kind of flinch as automatic to say, I'm going to have to go on a money diet here. I'll have to watch where I'm spending my money. I can't buy a coffee, you know, all these old tales. That's couldn't be further from the truth. A financial plan is supposed to show you where to spend your money and how to spend your money at the right time. So, you know, I think the majority of people should be in a situation where their income is over their expenditure. If it isn't, the majority of the time, it's not due to the income level. It's due to your spending habits or maybe your borrowing habits in the past, where maybe too much of your income is going out to pay debt. And that's usually what we find with clients that have that issue with closing the gap or a very small gap between income and expenditure. But I'd encourage anybody on askpaul.ie, we have a free personal budget or a financial planner download. You just record your income coming in, and try and be scientific as you can with what's going out. And then you have to also try and fight, Greg, for all those things that are going out. So whether it is the gas bill, the electricity bill, the broadband, anything that's going out on a monthly basis, you owe it to yourself to make sure that you're getting the best deal, because you work too hard to get the money into your current account. You pay income tax, you know, by the time you actually get your wage and the tax man takes their cut, whatever you have left over, you need to make sure you're fighting for every cent and that it's being spent in the right way and you're not being overcharged, or you could be getting a better deal down the road. And the reason is the first chapter is it's the most important part. It doesn't make a difference whether you have millions in the bank or 10,000 or a euro left over after payday. It's the most important part
of
the financial.
Well, that's interesting you should across the gambit there, because I think often maybe, you know, we go into conversations like this, not you or I, but it can happen whereby it's presumed that we're talking about maybe those with quite a bit of disposable income, or they should have it, or those on the average industrial wage. But we're broadcasting primarily to Donegal, whereby, you know, we've one of the highest rates of poverty. We've certainly got the highest rate of lowest disposable income. But that does not mean that we couldn't benefit from, you know, going through our finances, I presume.
100%. And in fact, those on lower incomes and those that are kind of finding it difficult, I suppose, maybe to survive on a weekly or monthly basis, they really need to be budgeted kings and queens. And in fairness, more often than not, they are. To be fair, Greg, when I meet a client and only kind of on a lower income, they tend to watch the pennies or the cents and the euros, if you like, more so than clients with more income, because they have to make the money stretch and they're really good at doing it. But sometimes what they don't do is, you know, I often hear people saying, I can't save. On the Ask Paul Instagram page, we have a really good savings challenge. We start by saving €1 this week, €2 the following week, then €3 and €4. You see where I'm going here? It increases euro a week. And at the end of the year, you'll have saved €1,352. That could be great for Christmas next year. It could be great for clearing debts or maybe paying for the holiday for the first time without using the credit card. So I believe that absolutely everybody can start some element of a savings plan. It doesn't need to be tens of thousands or millions. So of course, we've got clients that we help that have tens of thousands, millions, where they're selling businesses and taking pensions out and doing all the kind of higher end of the financial planning journey. But I still believe in what's called advice equality. We try to make our content clear for everybody, no matter what end of the spectrum you're in. And yeah, I think it's, like I said, from €1, you can start a savings account today and just try and up it to even 150 or €2 next week and just take it slowly and make sure you change some of your habits along the way.
It is a little bit like getting fit, isn't it? It's the first step or the first couple of steps that often stops us beginning the process at all. Budgeting is simple, but it's not simple at the same time. Personal budgeting. I mean, if you want to be serious about this, and there's a full section on it, you do need to do something of a deep dive into it and take the whole process seriously.
Yeah, it is, in fairness. So what you need to do is, like I said, take a deep dive, go through your accounts and find out where you are. It's exactly like the fitness industry. You're so right. You know, it's like saying, I want to lose weight, but you're afraid to jump on the weighing scales to find out what weight you are. And you're almost afraid to set yourself a goal in case you fail. It's the exact same when it comes to personal finance. But trust me, if you take the leap and you put your finances into the spreadsheet that we have, it's free to download on askpaul.ie. If you download it and you complete it and you spend only 15, 20 minutes going through bank statements, putting in your average cost, fighting for every penny or every cent that you can get, it will get easier. And if you do that and just check in every quarter. But, you know, I think today a lot of people live in a world where Instagram and things are kind of self-graduated, are very quick. People want to buy things now. They want to get things on loans. They want to get use credit cards. They want to use buy now, get now, pay later, I suppose, buy now, pay later. And you know, you have to try and break that habit for yourself and realize that every time you do a loan or a credit card, you're borrowing your future income off a banker and you have to pay that banker interest.
Yeah.
So our main goal as a financial planner is to get you to use your money the best way.
You know, and like, say, for instance, and I use Revolut. I've got no issue with Revolut, don't get me wrong, but they're bringing new products to market now. So you just might have had a Revolut, you're ticking along, next thing you know, you've got buy now, pay later, right? That's an option that's been given to you. Next thing you know, it's like, well, we could, it's sort of like a credit card-y situation or a loan, and it's made very easy. You know, it's like even getting a car quote, insurance quote, and this is actually a good product of theirs, by the way, but you click a few buttons and they've got a quote and you can put it in situ just like that there and pay straight out of that card. That's a good thing, don't get me wrong. And I'm not saying the buy now, pay later, but it's dangled in front of you. It just comes up as a notification and it's so bloody easy.
100%. It's so easy to spend money as well these days. You can spend it by tapping your watch, your phone, your card, etc. compared to years ago. You know, I remember when I was first there and living, you know, you had to have money in your wallet. And it was, if you were running low, you could see it there and then. Where you're tapping, it's very hard to keep track of your finances as well. But also on that point, the problem with the buy now, pay later is that if you don't buy now, you don't pay later, you skip a debit or you don't pay the time, it goes on to a normal loan. If you miss one of those and you're 18, 19, or even early 20s, when you go try and get a mortgage later, you might have a bad credit rating or you might have a bad credit report. And this is where it's those simple lessons, I suppose. This is what the book, I Hope and Money Made Easy, that we basically taught you everything you need to know when you were leaving school about personal finances that were not taught in school. I think it should be on the curriculum. I think we should be going through this in 4th year. We should have programs where we're showing kids how to manage money when you leave school, when you get your first pay packet. And it's not about saving every penny. It's about putting maybe 5 or 10%. I'm a big believer in our clients spending the majority of their money, but just taking a small proportion and doing something cool over 3 years, 5 years, 10, 15, 20 years. And once you do that and you religiously do it every month, you'll never have any financial problems. Is that we're not taught that. And then by the time you do realize it, maybe in your mid-20s for some people, it's when it's almost they're on the conveyor belt where they need borrowing to do everything and they can't break it because they need to pay for the family holiday with the credit card. They need to pay for Christmas by getting a credit union loan. The kids go back to school, they need to get a little bit of a top up from somewhere. And it's almost all their income's gone and they're in that cycle. So it's trying to break that sooner rather than later. And that's why they're probably the most two important chapters of the book, personal budgeting and debt. If you have debt, how to get out of debt and how to manage debt properly, I suppose.
Yeah, managing your debt, because, we it is an area where we tend to bury our heads in the sand. We accept it. We put all the cards. It's like, the table always wins. Whoever we owe the money to, they're in control. Yeah. We're subservient to them. There's no way out of it. Blah, 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 right? But we need...
Exactly.
But that, again, let's have another deep dive into it. What can you do with your debt or to make your life more manageable? Your debt. Yeah, get out of debt, preferably.
It is really important. I suppose one thing we talk about in the book as well is, as a financial planner, we're not trying to say to people, you're wrong to have debt. Everybody uses debt at some stage. What we're trying to say is, if you have debt, why don't we try and do maybe an investment account where you're earning interest over a 3, 5, or 10-year period? And then in 10 years, when you go to change your car, you're taking it from your investment account rather than going to the banker and paying them interest. And you've earned interest on your account over 10 years. And I'm 41 years of age. My pension isn't 100% where it needs to be, but I'm only 41. I've another 19 years to get there. So financial planning is all about realizing that it's not going to change. Back to the gym, you're not going to lose a stone in the first week. It's about trying to consistently say, where am I, where do I want to get to, and what measures do I need to take that's not going to impact me too much. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to go on a mad diet, I don't want to stop all my spending or save every penny. You're not going to last. Let's say you're in debt. Can I get out of debt in 3 years? And when I get out of debt in 3 years, can I try and not borrow for 2 years? That's a five-year plan. At the end of 5 years, I might have 10, 15, 20 grand saved or 5 grand, whatever it is. I'm going to use that to change the car the next time, and I'm going to live within that budget because that's all I have. I'm not going to be attracted to the PCP. I'm not going to be attracted to the car loan. So it's about owning your own income. Mm. But one thing we ask people to do in the book as well is to write down 3 financial goals. And I think it's important for all listeners today to have 3 goals. You probably have them anyway, whether it's trying to get the property letter or clear your debt or clear your mortgage or, maybe retire early or kids' education funds, whatever it is. It's just writing those 3 goals down and then trying to find out, how does my income get me there? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes we're just so busy with life. Yeah, just end up rolling by every month, 5 years, 10 years go by. You have no real plan, and you're just in that rat race.
But I think sometimes too we just settle for that. And I think one of the significant indicators to this is we're all too busy, but we all have time really at the same time. But like crazy brand loyalty, people will say to you, "I've been with Vodafone for 25 years." Well, wow, fantastic! Shop around. Even just shopping around, car insurance, house insurance, broadband, mobile.
Do you know what it is?
Very few people actually do it.
It's just laziness. I'm going to have to call it out for laziness because it doesn't take that much time. And people put it maybe on the long finger as well and say, I'll do that next week. Then the renewal quote comes in, I haven't got time. Takes 5 minutes to pop online, put your quote details in to any of the websites out there. There's hundreds of different websites in the Irish marketplace, 100 different companies that will give you quotes. Jumping on a quote, get a best quote for yourself. The same with your broadband, same with your electricity, your gas, whatever it is. Jump on, spend 10 minutes, but it's about owning it. But you know what it is as well? And we try through this from a financial planning and a psychology point of view in the book. I mean, anyone can produce a book in our industry that goes through pension, savings, investments. That's kind of boring. What we try to do here is really talk to people about the psychology of money and their own, how they should be focusing their money and where they should put it. But they need to own their money. They need to realize how hard they've already got the money into the bank in the first place. And if you crack that for yourself, that you've worked your backside off to get that money in, you've paid the tax man, now it's in your account. If you go out and you just spend 100 euro or 200 quid willy-nilly, that's probably been a day's work for you. Think about that. You've left your family, your kids, your cat, your budget, your parents, whatever your situation is, and it's cost you a day's work. And once you own your money and you fight for your money, you'll just automatically make all those changes. And you'll be serious about doing this every year, shopping around, because you want to make your money work as hard as possible for you. Because you've worked as hard as possible to get it into your account.
Yeah. Now, listen, we can't go through this entire book. We've gone through the 2 sections, but it goes on to managing your debt, saving and investing, your tax, financial protection, mortgage, pensions, and on and on and on. A caller says, would you recommend the envelope money saving hack, the one where you put away an amount of cash away each week? Well, you've talked about that. How people want to structure that, that's up to them. But effectively, you've already, that was one of the first things that you kind of were advocating for, if I'm reading that text correctly.
Yeah, you're right. I love the envelope system. We have a lot of video content on our website and on our Instagram page, askpaul.ie, going back before COVID-19, you know, 40 since COVID-19, you know, the use of cash has fallen dramatically. So what I would do in that situation, you mentioned Revolut earlier on, I would have my main current account with all my bills in it, my mortgage, my rent, you know, my utility bills, everything in there. And then I transfer my discretionary spend, my 50, 100 quid a week, whatever it is, into my Revolut and only use my Revolut account. I'd rip up my debit card to my main working account. And then the credit, the Revolut is basically your envelope. That's your 50 quid or your 100 quid. When it's gone, it's gone. So if you want to do that, or else, yeah, if you can take cash out of the bank or take it out of the post office, no matter what situation is, take it out and try and get the cash to last you. It's the best system to manage money, because some people find it very hard tracking cash when they're tapping everywhere. And it's just too easy to get rid of money, I suppose.
All right. So as well as we've been talking about how to protect, grow and replace your income, investing money and key steps to take before you do, identifying the best pension plan for you, which can be a bit of a minefield for people as well, and navigating the Irish mortgage sector, government schemes and tax as well. You could go, I presume, to ask Paul, what's the .ie or .com?
Yeah, askpaul.ie. And on Instagram, we have tons of content. We've over 100,000 followers there on Instagram. We do free Q&As every week and we answer DMs for free. And the book is available to buy in every major bookstore online, whether it's Easons or Bookstation or Amazon, wherever you usually get your books. It's freely available everywhere.
Okay, and again, it does feel reminiscent of a feature we might do on health. It is, you do have to put the effort in. You have to sort of commit to something. You have to say, right, I want to control my financial future, or or exercise whatever control I do have on it.
Yeah, exactly. And affairs was very important. It was very hard to write the book when I was asked to in the first place, because I didn't want to come across as patronizing, because I don't know everyone's financial situation that's reading the book. So we tried to do is help readers understand what it should mean to them. Everyone's different when it comes to finances, whether their parents brought them up, whether in a relationship, whether on their own, where they have kids, what income, what tax brackets, you name it, what group schemes they have in work, whether it's pensions, etc. The book is supposed to help you understand what financial planning should mean to you and help you build the right financial planning steps to have a brighter financial future. That might sound corny, but that's really what the book does. And I think we've nailed that message in the book quite well.
All right, have a wonderful day. Thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it. Okay, no problem. That's Paul Merriman there, author of Money Made Easy, Simple Steps to Managing Your Finances. Now, we had this email from a listener, which reads as follows. Dear Greg, I've started a scheme. I'm in distress as I've been treated badly from day one from my supervisor. Without going into it, I'm being bullied in front of fellow employees, which is causing my anxiety to make me sick to my stomach to go into work. I'm terrified to approach the person as they are hostile to me from day one. It's been made clear I'm not wanted and I'm enduring the sniggering and the gaslighting and the social exclusion. If I just leave, I lose my wages and I cannot get social welfare then for 9 weeks. I've looked online and on Reddit. I've discovered I'm not the only one who has endured this treatment on a scheme, but there's no one I can talk to. I have to prove it to social welfare, and my only option is to write it down day by day. I looked into Human Rights and Equality Commission, but they only ask them for the code of conduct. As far as I can see, I know this may sound trivial, but I'm at my wit's end, as I've my family also to look after on this payment. My mental health's in a mess over this, and I can't afford to have no money for 9 weeks. Also, I'm a mother, and I'm struggling to make ends meet. Is there anyone I could get in contact with? Because this scheme is not for me. I really was looking forward to being back at work, and this was what I thought a way for me to get back into the workforce after being a stay-at-home carer for my elderly parents whom passed away. I thank you for your time and any advice you could give a faithful Donegal listener. Thank you very much for that correspondence. Now, obviously, we don't know all the ins and outs of that individual situation, but we can speak generally to Kevin McKinney, who's industrial officer, who's an industrial official with SIPTU, the union. Good morning to you, Kevin.
Good morning, Greg, and to your listeners.
And I'm sure, like me, you sympathise greatly with this person. They kind of feel like they're stuck in the situation they're in, the loyalty to their family, and they have to have an income. But it's clear that this working environment is very negative, very toxic for them.
Yeah, and to be truthful about it, it's actually more common than you would realise. In today's employment, we come across it quite often, where people feel that they have nowhere to go, and that they use the terminology of bullying and harassment and so forth. And sometimes it's not that at all, it's something else. But it's very, very hard to prove. But I sort of feel for your listener, and I certainly understand where she's coming from, and I understand the difficulties that this has presented for her. So there's a, given broad strokes, because obviously you can't talk about individuals, but given broad strokes of what people are entitled to do, and what they should have in place, any employee, and this lady is an employee, albeit she's through a scheme. Now, it is a bit more difficult for people who are on schemes because they're not recognised as employees per se, and they only get a few pound extra onto their benefits that they are entitled to. It's a back-to-work scheme. It's to retrain and skill people up, get them familiar with the workplace again. And it's a good scheme when it's operating. Now, in all jobs, you have a relationship with your employer, and this is no different. And that relationship is probably the only relationship in your life that you actually have some ground rules that are covered by legislation, they're covered by contracts of employment, and they're covered by terms and conditions within that employment, and various policies and procedures that go with that. Good employers will adopt good policies and procedures and ensure that all staff know about them. So what you have, the most important tool within the workplace, is probably the grievance procedure and the disciplinary procedure, alongside a good dignity and respect at work. And that policy is really paramount and needs to be in place, and employers should ensure that it is in place. It gives people then the opportunity, when they have a problem like this, they have somewhere to go. Mm. And if the problem's about with a direct line manager, and in this case, that seems that's what the case is, then the employer, the board of management that run these schemes, needs to then have something in place that can allow someone to make a complaint or lodge a grievance and have that heard in an independent way and with no blame or guilt attached to it in the first instance. So I would suggest that all workers, and this lady included, is that if you've got a problem at work, you should access, first of all, what is the policy around the grievance procedure, familiarise yourself with it. And ultimately, I would say everybody should be in a trade union, because that's the advice that we give.
Yeah, of course. So, but in this person's situation, and it's a horrible situation they find themselves in, there's no real easy way to resolve it either, because you can pack it in and be without money for 9 weeks and then sort of try the process again, or else you're going to have to sort of get involved in the system. But if this person is not part of a union, and they want to sort of have a conversation with someone senior in that company, are they entitled to have someone with them for moral support, or just to sort of be someone there beside them?
Well, under the grievance procedure, there's a code of practice laid down in legislation. It's statutory instrument 146 of the year 2000. And that's a very important piece. And that talks about representation for workers who want to engage with their employer, and their employer must engage. Now, some employers do not recognise trade unions, but under that piece of legislation, they have no choice. They must recognise a representative for that person. So that's where they get the assistance. It's difficult for scheme participants because they're not really employed, and they join a trade union for a financial point of view, even they probably can't afford it. Mm-hmm. But you have avenues that you can go to and seek advice. And certainly we're open to giving advice and advise people accordingly. And while I represent members who pay into the trade union, who are organised workers, and what my role is fundamentally to negotiate with employers, yes, it is also to empower our members so that they can work through and discuss issues that they have at work through a procedure and policies that they should have in place. So there is a
so
way
in relation
here
to this person,
lady.
Right? They've said they're terrified to approach the person as they're hostile towards them, and that's been the case from day one, right? But so that's something that's going to have to be overcome. But what protection does that person have? Like, if they're having the conversation, what do they say to them? Say, do they just say exactly how they feel? I don't think they've got anything to lose at this stage. I think they need to get the courage up and have a write stuff down and have a very frank conversation and say, I am actually prepared to take this further.
Well, I would suggest that it's going to be very difficult to go to a manager who's over you, who's sort of leading the charge, if you like, dictates what needs to be done, when it needs to be done, and so forth. So the option here is, and I would advise this person to actually go and talk to the board, find out who the chairperson of the scheme is, and talk to that person and explain to them the difficulty. Now, you can do it two ways. You can do it informally, or you can do it formally. If you do it informally, you can sit down, have a conversation. It will be recorded in terms of notes will be taken and so forth. And if it becomes a formal complaint, then obviously everybody has a right to natural justice. So the person that she would be complaining about, who she can't approach, would be the person then would have to answer and respond to those allegations. Now, that wakens up employers in the most part, and normally it sort of resolves things. And you know, Greg, as well, in fairness, most problems if solved at the lower level will stay resolved. When you start to raise the ante, they become a polarisation of positions, and then people get entrenched in their own particular view. That's where you need assistance. So I think talking to her employer, which is the board, not the individual, and have a conversation there informally and explain how they're feeling. And I can say this one thing. The majority of people that I represent, and this is nothing new to me, I've been doing this for over 30 years, and I can safely say that 95%+ of people who go through this process become empowered.
Yeah.
They understand that they where they stand and what they can do. And that is fundamental to all of this, knowing what your rights are and where you can go. And I would obviously advise this person that the first port of call, not to the manager, because it's very hard to say to a bully, when you deem a person a bully, very hard to say to them to stop. You know, we teach our kids that. Now, adults are in the same problem in the workplace. Bullying is paramount. And in some employments, it's more severe than others. And I have seen grown men and women with families really articulate and all the rest breaking down because of bullying and harassment in the workplace.
Yeah.
It's very, very common, believe it or not.
Yeah, and this person, which saddens me greatest of all, obviously feels incredibly isolated on their own.
Absolutely.
That they're ploughing their own trough. Okay. Right, Kevin, listen, thanks for that. Good advice. And if the listener wants to get back in touch with us, we can follow stuff up. But I appreciate it. Thank you very much for your time.
No, Paul or Greg, thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Kevin McKinney there, industrial official with SIP2. Another listener says, there must be someone that person can go to, their managers, which is the same advice we've got from Kevin there, a boss or even a workplace rep. It's possible and in fact probable that this is actually happening to others in the same workplace. Please let the writer know they are not alone. People are listening and are willing to help. And that's a very important message, that you aren't alone. And you're... listener buddies here, that's what we are, your listener family, are backing you 100%. So let us know how you get on, and let us know if there is a person above the bully, in inverted commas, that you can go to. You're going to have to. As I say, there's no easy path in this one. You certainly don't want to be without money for 9 weeks. And I think the easiest path to take is to take a stand, you know, and if there is a person above this person, go to them and say, this is what I've been going through. This is how I'm being treated. And that person might say, right, I wasn't aware of this. Maybe this is why there's a lack of productivity or whatever it might be, or a high turnover of staff, or people on schemes aren't being treated with the same respect as others. But the one message I was sent to you from our listeners that's coming through on text and what have you is that you aren't alone, and people have your back. Would it surprise you to learn that women do twice as much unpaid care and housework as men? A new study on gender and economic inequality has found. Carol Balfe is CEO of Action Aid Ireland and is with us on the programme now. Carol, good morning to you.
Good morning, and thanks for having me on.
It's our pleasure. How do we categorise unpaid care, or whether it be paid or unpaid? But when we talk about care in this context, what are we talking about?
Yeah, so care is really quite a broad concept that covers the physical, the psychological, the emotional support that's provided for those that need care. So often children, older people, and those who give care, so carers. And in terms of people with disabilities, I think it's important that we look beyond just care within that, because a lot of times what people need is support to be able to live independently rather than care per se. So it is quite a broad spectrum, but it's the everyday aspects of life where we look after one another, in essence.
So it could be looking after your children. It could be looking after a parent who needs a little bit more assistance, and anything in between and around that. So realistically then, so as our country, as we live longer, which is fantastic, we are going to need more care, presumably. I mean, that would be a reasonable assumption, isn't it? And it seems that unless things change, it's going to fall primarily to women.
Absolutely. And I think this is one of the things that we see the care issue as a kind of marginal issue. And it's absolutely fundamental. We will all need care at some point in our life. And that point about living older is a really valuable one and something that really affects older women in particular, because women are living longer than men and women are often experiencing more ill health at that stage of their lives. And it does mean that largely across the world and in Ireland, that responsibility for care is falling to women. And I think that's one of the issues that as a society, structurally and in a very foundational way, it's an issue of gender inequality, that level of care, both paid and unpaid, is predominantly performed by women. It is undervalued, invisible in terms of our economic assessments of what's valuable. And also in terms of paid care, often the majority of women who work in paid care, it's low paid, precarious employment, but it's often at the very root of who we are as humans. You know, the person looking after us is really what it means to be human and the care that we give and receive.
Yeah, and actually really, this is not really part of this conversation, but maybe it is going forward too. People are having smaller families. You know, and often when you talk about caring now, there might be 4, 5, 6 siblings, and in the future, it's probably going to be 1, 2, or 3. But anyway, as I say, I don't know what that means or how that fits into this conversation more generally. We heard too that I think there's a presumption as well that women are going to be the carers. We had a conversation earlier this week about from a woman who has got 4 or 5 siblings, and it just seems to be that everyone thinks that she is the carer and she can't get the others to help because she just happens to live closer to the parent that needs their care, someone who she loves very much, but it's overwhelming for her. And it can often be, for a lot of people, you know, from 40 to 60, 45 to 65, you know, a big chunk of someone's life whereby, you know, they're restricted in terms of taking holidays, time for themselves and what have you. It can be a huge commitment.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that we grapple with, moving this element of what seems like a private kind of family matter and looking at it from a wider societal perspective and what it means in terms of policy making and commitments by the government. Because I think what we find is women pick up more of the slack when there are fewer supports available from the state. And it is the nature of humanity that there will always be, you know, I am a lone parent, I care for my child, that is my responsibility. But the lack of public services, the lack of adequate and affordable childcare, all of those types of supports have a really detrimental impact on women's ability to have economic equality. And I think that's where we really need a governmental approach, and the state has clear responsibilities. And I think it's clear what we are seeing in Ireland, and it's replicated globally, states have underinvested in public services, and that means that women are triply disadvantaged. They lose access to those public services like childcare, health facilities, access to, you know, supports around employment. And they have to pick up the burden when there isn't support for unpaid care. They themselves have to do the work, and they're just at a disadvantage from it. And what we find, and our report really looked at this, that particular groups of women are really negative affected. And typically they're groups that are already experiencing multiple types of discrimination. And in our research, we looked at disabled women, lone parents, traveller women, home carers, migrant women and older women. And all of these groups experience extra barriers and discriminations in terms of being able to fully participate in society. And the issue of care is really at the heart of that, because either they are providing care or they need care care supports. And this is something that in our report, we have set out 70 recommendations for the Irish government, a very detailed set of actions around social protection, access to childcare, early child care support and early childhood education, removing some of the restrictions, because a lot of women who experience poverty in Ireland, they are also have a high degree of caring responsibilities. And it's actually not a lot of what they said when we did this research, we did focus groups with those women. It wasn't the fact that they had to care. They loved their children. They loved, you know, it was that wasn't the problem. It was the restrictions that they experienced from the state and the extra barriers they experienced really in not being providing the support that they needed.
All right. Interesting stuff. I do appreciate you coming on. It ties, as I say, into quite nicely some conversations we've been having on the show over the last few days. Have a wonderful weekend, Carol. Thank you very much for your time. It's greatly appreciated. OK, that was Carol Balfe there, CEO of ActionAid Ireland. Is that something that resonates with you? 086 60 25,000. Now, just to remind you that if you are one of the many that listen to the show as a podcast, that you are always able to get involved in the conversation. And the best way to do so is to email comments@highlandradio.com. So if you're listening to the podcast, feel free to email comments@highlandradio.com and we'll include your comment. Many of you never listen to the show live and only listen to the podcast, and that's fine, but we want you to be involved as well. So comments@highlandradio.com. Also, if you're listening overnight, the show is played, replayed most nights, every night, most nights, if there's a tech issue, maybe not. But many of you on shift work or don't sleep, as well as others might, you listen to us overnight as well. Again, we want you involved in the conversation. Email comments@highlandradio.com. So it's not just when you're listening live, as so many of you do, and we do appreciate it. If you're listening to the pod or if you're listening to the overnight playback, feel free to get involved and have your say. Propose a topic, whatever it might be. Okay, let us take a break now. It is time for the news at 11 in just a couple of minutes.